Welcome to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast updating you on the latest IT news to come out of and around Redmond. As always, I'm your host, Michael Domingo, and I thank you for downloading and listening to this show. This week, a zero-day IE exploit gets a quick fix. SQL Server 2005 SP3 is released. A new Linux kernel is released. And a Windows 7 beta gets leaked onto the web. We'll have the news from Redmond right after this quick musical interlude. Welcome to the first episode of Redmond Radio for 2009. For first-time listeners, Redmond Radio is a podcast for those who want to keep up on key IT news and events, but are too busy to go searching and clicking and poking around websites or updating even RSS feeds. I'm Michael Domingo, and I've been hosting this show for about 6 years now, since its first iteration as MCP Radio back in 2002. We don't tell you everything that's going on, since we don't have the time or the inclination to know every little piece of IT or developer news out there. We do, however, filter out the dregs and tell you what you might find important to know now, so you can make better informed decisions about what to read when you visit the Redmond Media Group websites or any other external sites for that matter. We don't try to cram in as much as possible. On the contrary, we try to add only what we think might be necessary and keep the show to a listenable 10 to 30 minutes a week, unlike some podcasts that can go on and on and on for an insufferable hour or more. And before I go on and bore you further, let's just jump into the news. It's been 2 weeks since we last posted a podcast, so we'll round up the news from those last 2 weeks. IT news was exceptionally slow at the end of this year, but we expect it'll start to ramp up in the following weeks with CES and Macworld on the verge of taking place. With that, here are a few choice IT news nuggets. Microsoft ended 2008 with a critical out-of-cycle patch for Internet Explorer that was issued about 2 weeks ago and just on the heels of the December Patch Tuesday release. The new patch addressed an increasingly pervasive vulnerability that allows remote code execution in numerous versions of IE. The patch affects IE 5.01, IE 6, and all versions of IE sitting on Windows 2000 Service Pack 4, XP and XP Professional, as well as Vista and Windows Server 2003 and 2008. The emergency fix is a direct response to a zero-day IE 7 bug found in the wild the day after Patch Tuesday. Ben Greenbaum, Senior Research Manager of Symantec Security Response, said that while the timing isn't ideal, Microsoft responded properly to what was becoming a growing security threat as the attacks widened in both geographical and technological scope. For its part, Microsoft maintained that it was aware only of attacks that attempt to use the vulnerability against IE 7. Nonetheless, the company said it encourages customers to test and deploy this update as soon as possible. The fix is vital for Microsoft as IE is currently used by 69% of the world's surfers and is arguably one of the company's most recognizable brands outside of the Office suite. Redmond a few weeks ago said that it would continue to investigate a new zero-day bug affecting SQL Server, while Microsoft spokesman Bill Sisk a couple weeks ago did acknowledge that hackers using this exploit could get access over a whole enterprise processing environment through this increasingly common SQL injection attack. He said Microsoft is not aware that any such incursions have occurred leveraging this particular unpatched hole. The exploit in question is triggered using a SQL Server Extended Stored Procedure command as an entry point into an infected system. Extended Stored Procedure is a process by which the database interacts with the operating system via a linked library function during the application's runtime. Such a process is key to continued maintenance of any given database powered by SQL. According to Microsoft, the RCE exploit affects SQL Server 2000, versions of SQL Server 2005, SQL Server 2000 Desktop Engine Apps, and Windows Internal Database, also known as WUCON. The recent glut of zero-day bugs for Windows products has reignited debate among some security pros about disclosure of proof-of-concept exploits versus purposely releasing malicious bugs into the wild. Research for the common good versus research for notoriety or the sake of vindictiveness. The SQL flaw was first made public in mid-December by Austria-based SEC Consult Advisory, which said the SQL flaw makes it possible for hackers to target the vulnerability remotely on websites that link search boxes, customer databases, or other web apps to the SQL Server. It was SEC Consult's report that eventually led to this patch, as the independent research shop claims they told Microsoft about the flaw in April and by mid-December seemed to grow weary of the software giant dragging its feet. This development is particularly important to security pros because while the SQL Server injection is by itself a rather complicated vector through which to hatch a nefarious hack, a seasoned interloper could, in theory, use remote code execution through the embattled Internet Explorer and then deploy the SQL Server bug. There had been some strides made to protecting customers before this advisory. In the week of December 15th, Microsoft released the latest beta versions of its code analysis tool, an anti-cross-site scripting library for developers, a critical part of which is a tool to identify vulnerabilities to SQL injection attacks and other incursions. Going forward, Microsoft will address the SQL issue further through either a new service pack release, another off-cycle patch release, or by way of its regularly monthly security rollout. The channel through which future hotfixes or workarounds are deployed will be based on customer needs, the advisory said. Microsoft a few weeks ago released SQL Server 2005 Service Pack 3, along with SP3 Cumulative Update 1. On the same day, the company also released Cumulative Update 11 for SQL Server 2005 Service Pack 2. The company said it would also offer incentives for Microsoft's partners and Microsoft Dynamics customers to jump to SQL Server 2008, which was released last summer. Microsoft said it updated its price list on New Year's Day and will replace the runtime for SQL Server 2005 with that of SQL Server 2008, according to a Microsoft Dynamics blog. Features in SQL Server SP3 include supportability enhancements plus improvements in the database engine, notification services, and replication and reporting services, according to an MSDN library webpage. SP3 contains all previously released cumulative updates for SQL Server 2005. For SQL users not opting for SP3, Microsoft released Cumulative Update 11 for SQL Server 2005 SP2, which contains all of the hotfixes for SP2 without the new features in SP3. However, for those who are moving from SQL Server SP2 to SP3, Microsoft offers a caveat. Be sure to apply SP3 Cumulative Update 1. Microsoft also released a new feature pack for SQL Server 2008 that provides optional add-ons for the database solution. Before we go on, a short message from 1105 Media. Check out Optimizing Storage in a Virtualized Environment, a series of white papers that discusses the challenges of managing and optimizing storage as organizations implement a virtualization strategy and how those challenges may be addressed through effective use of storage technology. Only in the Tech Library at mcpmag.com. Okay, now with that, we're back to our regularly scheduled content. Here's one more piece on the security front. European security researchers have demonstrated a weakness in a hash algorithm widely used for creating digital certificates to secure websites and sign emails. The weaknesses, found in the MD5 hash algorithm, could be used as a basis to generate fraudulent X509 certification authority certificates, allowing hackers to forge secure websites, those that use the HTTPS protocol to ensure authenticity. Any other secure services that use the secure socket layer, such as digitally signed email, could be vulnerable as well. The researchers created a phony certificate, one that appears to be issued by a root certificate authority or trusted issuer of certificates for public key infrastructures. The team harnessed a system built of 200 Sony PlayStation PS3s to generate a MD5 hash value identical to a legitimate one issued by a CA. The process took about 2 days. The hash function is an operation that ingests a string of data and outputs another string called the hash value. Since a hash value has no easily decipherable relation to the original input, it typically may not be duplicated by using some other input. The MD5 algorithm, however, has been shown to be faulty in this manner. In 2004, researchers theoretically showed the identical hash values from different inputs that could be created with the 128-bit MD5 hash algorithm. This recent announcement is one of the first demonstrations that a duplicate MD5 hash value can be created. Although the National Institute of Standards and Technology has advised end users to move from the MD5 to SHA-1, many commercial CAs still use MD5. The researchers reported that RSA and VeriSign still use MD5 for some of their certificates. Only those certificates using the MD5 algorithm could be affected. Those based on the stronger SHA-1, SHA-256, SHA-384, or SHA-512 algorithms are not affected. Microsoft has advised its customers to stop using any certificates that were generated by the MD5 hashing algorithm. In response to the paper, VeriSign product marketing executive Tim Callen noted that VeriSign has been in the process of phasing out MD5-based certificates, and the work did not jeopardize any certificates now in place. The upcoming Windows 7 beta, scheduled to be released this month, found its way onto the internet over the holidays. According to several news reports, the leaked version can currently be found on several BitTorrent sites. It is the Beta 1 version, and according to those sites who have tested the software, it's very similar to the pre-release beta Microsoft gave testers in October. Many industry watchers predict that Microsoft would provide early previews of the beta to customers during the holidays. That preview appears not to have happened, although some commenters are wondering whether Microsoft leaked the beta on purpose. Microsoft has not commented on that speculation or the leak itself. While Microsoft has not said exactly when in January it will release the beta, it is widely believed that the company will distribute it at the Consumer Electronics Show taking place this week in Las Vegas. Sun Microsystems released the latest version of its desktop virtualization software. The XVM VirtualBox 2.1 comes with several enhancements, including accelerated 3D graphics, better network performance, additional storage support, plus improved support for Mac OS X on Intel virtualization technology, as well as VMware's and Microsoft's virtualization formats VMDK and VHD. Sun builds its VirtualBox software as the first major open-source hypervisor to support all the most popular host operating systems, including Windows, Mac OS X, Linux, Solaris, and OpenSolaris. It's designed to allow developers to create virtual machines into which they can install various operating systems. Working in the VM, developers can build, test, and run cross-platform multi-tier applications on a single laptop or desktop computer. The company unveiled its first XVM product at the 2007 Oracle Open World Conference. Sun has actually been providing virtualization technology since the development of the first JavaVM, but XVM was the company's first foray into hypervisor-based virtualization. Sun is reporting huge adoption numbers around its virtualization portfolio. The company claims 8 million downloads and 2.4 million registrations for the VirtualBox alone. The desktop virtualization software is part of a larger portfolio that includes the XVM Ops Center, XVM Server, which is the company's hypervisor for data centers, and the Sun Virtual Desktop Infrastructure. All are available under the new public license, GPL version 3. And in our last item for this episode, the developers behind Linux have released the latest version of the open source operating system kernel. Version 2.6.28 has a number of prominent new features and is the first version of Linux to support fully the new ext4 file system. ext4 can support a file system of up to 1 exabyte and a single file up to 16 terabytes. ext3, the current file system mostly used by Linux, can only scale to a 16 terabytes per file system size and accommodate a maximum file size of only 2 terabytes. And that's it for this week's news. Thanks to all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program, and those who pass this show on to their colleagues. You're the ones who help to make this show even more successful by helping me gain a wider audience step by step. I'm Michael Domingo. I'll chat with you next week here on Redmond Radio.